for two aging mid-level Hollywood celebrities who think a podcast is a good idea and who ask the eternal question to fill the hole in their soul. Did we do it? Here they are, Cage and Kevin!
I'll wait for you to grab the guitar. And by the way, happy birthday to the great Bob Marley. Bob Marley's birthday today. What do you got? You got a little Bob Marley to bring us in honor of the great Bob's birthday?
I don't think I know any. This could all be gold, though.
One Love? You don't know One Love? You don't know Is This Love? You don't know...
Oh, I've got an idea. Bob Way? You play it. You play it and sing it. That'd be great. Okay. In 5, 4...
One good thing about music... We need heat you, you feel no pain.
Are we on now? Did you press record?
Always record.
Oh, were you recording before? Were you doing the sneaky pre?
Yeah.
In case something funny happened. Oh, God. Wait, who plays bass for us? Is that Cam or Carter?
That's Carter. Oh, that's Carter's our bass man.
I thought it was Cam Boo.
You know, they say you want to get in the Carter zone for the bass drops.
Oh, really?
Sure.
Do you have your bongos?
I do.
Here we go.
Red and white, blue suede shoes.
Come on.
I'm Uncle Sam. How do you do? Come on.
Here we go.
Check my pulse. It didn't change. Stay at 72. Come rain or shine. Wave the flag. Come on, Cam. Pop the bag. Rock the boat. Skin the goat. What?
Woo! Here we go.
Summertime gone, come and gone, my own way. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. What a treat. Did we do it? That was the great Robert Hunter, Jerry Garcia song, U.S. Blues.
Well, I just want it to be known that, you know, I would never have sung that on my own. Is my squeaky chair or like a big bummer?
No, it just gives it some verisimilitude, as they say in the theater.
Wow.
You know what I mean? It's some real sounds of the podcast.
It might be bugging me, though. That's for damn sure.
Just want to give a quick shout out to a fan and friend who sent me a beanie because
what?
People have been listening to the podcast. They know that I have an array of beanies. And my friend and your friend, Emma Blythe, who loves the show, sent me this beautiful beanie from by Sunny Boy Clothing. I believe they're out in Highland Park. So thank you, Emma, and thank you to Sunny Boy.
When it hits you, feel no pain. Whoa, whoa, I say one good thing about music. When it hits you,
you feel no pain. This is how our podcast has blown up worldwide. It's insane. I can't believe we're getting texts and calls and snail mail from around the world.
Yes, number one in the U.S. for us, not of all podcasts in terms of the volume of people that are listening within the Did We Do It.
Wait, the U.S.? We're number one for us.
For us, the number one amount of the amount of listeners, U.S. number one. Number two, what do you think?
I'm going to go UK.
UK.
Because they understand. They understand what we're about.
I can tell you number three if you just give me 1 second. But you know what? I believe it's
Kevin's got the numbers.
Are you interested? Are you interested?
Oh God, I am. Are you kidding? Okay. I mean, why are we doing this? Because the pay sucks. Speaking of, when do the big dollars roll in? Because it's starting to feel like a job, and you know, we have to deliver now. I have not seen dollar one.
Well, listen. You know, you do art for art's sake, Kyle. The money comes. You never do something just for the money, but it's okay to do it for the money. What? That didn't make sense. All right. Well, listen, look at this.
Wow, top you coined US, the phrase there.
Top U.S. states. We've got California number one, Texas number two. Interesting. We've got fans in Texas.
Wait, what was our first state?
California.
Wow. So that's where we're from in the biggest state.
Yeah. Texas. Although
I told you that, you know, L.A. is the D's worst city.
It's also number one city. L.A. Our number two city is Seattle, Tacoma. Interesting.
Hello.
Then New York, you know why? Of course. Then New York.
You know why? Because you're calling us the grunge podcast of a generation.
What am I going to change? There's no front on 10 across street.
Dude, I think we're on the cutting edge of a new movement. The grunge podcast movement. It's picking up where the music left off.
The grodcast.
We don't adhere to any rules, man.
Man, you know what? I was ahead of my time with the beanie. Now I just got to get some flannel. Oh,
God. The beanie is your calling card. It's your hallmark. I guess we're going to have to sell some merch.
Yeah.
Should we sell merch?
Time. Yeah.
It's time to monetize this puppy, isn't it?
It's time.
At home. Darwin Pictures of Mountaintops with him on top. Lemon yellow sun, arms raised in a beam. The deadly
when will we know if it's
if
the right thing?
He really loves me. I don't know. Everything you say, no, it's a song for me. I was Whitney Houston.
It is. I do. But that's what songs are. You know, Dave Grohl taught me that songs are bumper stickers.
Dr. G.
You can put it on. Yeah. Yeah. You remember I told you I did that GM next.
No.
Have we done that? You know, I want you to always remember, because I know I only have three stories. And so I start saying, just let me know. And of course, you'll cut it out.
I'll just cut it out. I don't even tell you, Grandpa. I just let you tell this. I know it makes you feel
way weird. Back in the days.
Yes, we've heard.
General Motors
yes.
Approached me to do be like a. They wanted to create a viral sensation. They wanted to get in on all this viral stuff and make videos. Oh. And they sent me around the world to different rock festivals back when they did festivals.
Yeah, in the before and times.
And I interviewed all these bands. The Foo Fighters were playing at a festival.
Yeah, but you guys knew each other because
right.
Dave so played drums on the first D album. He was in the
and
tribute.
He
played the devil in the tribute music video. I mean, you guys go a long way back.
That stuff.
So when he saw you, did he know that you were going to be the interviewer?
Wow. That I was the corporate shill?
Yeah.
Well, it was real.
It was a little disappointment in his eyes.
It was tough for me to swallow because, well, that's the thing. You're kind of like, all of a sudden you're like the Brita water salesman showing up at your door. And he's your friend. And you're like, hey, Kevin, you need clean water, don't you? I'm working for Brita now. No, how's it going?
No, no, it's good for your skin.
Yeah. Anyway, they just got me on this thing. I thought, you know what? It's great. I want to help out my friends first. But he was there. And he knew he was. But you know, actually, if you're at a festival, there's a lot of downtime.
So what did he? But so you were interviewing him?
Well, I would interview bands for we do a video. Please don't look them up. I think they're all on YouTube. I forget what the best one was. I did like Jason
Spiker,
Mraz.
Can we
and,
put up this Jason Mraz Kyle interview, please?
Well, I guess actually you could play a little of the Dr. G, as we affectionately call it.
Sure.
But I thought, what do I really want to know from Dave? Like as me, Kyle Gass, musician, wannabe. rock star. I was like, you know what?
Get Dave, to the reels.
How do you write a hit?
Yeah.
That's what I want to know. I said, Dave, teach me and great everyone question. Else on this. And
because the guy has a lot of hits.
Well, obviously the guy knows. And that's, you're always trying to crack the code. And then we actually wrote one. We wrote a hit right there. He was saying, you know, keep it simple. Yeah, keep it on a bumper sticker. And I think our song was lots of bitch, but keep on trucking. Lots of, well, I guess we'll probably, Johnny, do we have that? I think it's on YouTube somewhere.
Lots of bitch, it always has been. I'm a guy who was a has been, but now I'm a big star. Got a car, got a bumper stick on the back.
About a groove. Think about it like it's a bumper sticker.
Okay.
You know?
Wife's a bitch.
That's a bitch. That's a bitch.
A GM next.
Wow. And he I love the bumper sticker. Because well, I mean, look, these
true.
Guys. Let me just list some of the
what?
Hits.
Oh my God.
All My Life, Monkey Wrench, Times Like These, My Hero, Best of You, The Pretender, Everlong. What do those songs have in common?
Call on me.
Kyle.
Monster hits. And they can all be on a bumper sticker, I think.
Yeah.
Did you watch the Robin Williams documentary?
No.
Come Inside My Brain.
No, not yet.
Maybe I didn't ask you.
You did not?
That.
No, because that sounds like one I would very much be interested in seeing.
Of course. It's Robin... It's one of those documentaries. Yeah, you'd be surprised to know that I'm not the hugest Robin Williams guy. Would that surprise you? here's the headline is, if you tell a story, a well-made story on a documentary, another example, The Tribe Called Quest. Have you seen their documentary?
That
by
was...
Michael, Mr. New York. What's his name? Michael, what's his name? Mr.
Rappaport.
Rappaport. Yeah,
of course. Of course, no, and I love Tribe Called Quest. Are you kidding? Can I get a hit?
Right, but I never took a deep dive. You know, probably
Godfathers
a hit or two.
Godfathers of hip hop, right there.
But yeah, of course. I mean, now I know because I watched the documentary.
Yeah,
and it was, it was so well done. I was like, I'm fascinated by this.
I'm
referencing the Robin Williams "Come Inside My Brain." I think it's called. Come Inside My Mind. I don't want to get it right. Come Inside My Mind.
Let me take a look. Well, what was it? What was the takeaway for you?
Well, there's so many takeaways.
But I mean, why were you saying, you were saying that you weren't a huge fan, but you,
I think the, this. Well, but then watching, I mean, this documentary, they got all the right interviews and they just told the story. And with any, I mean, what a trajectory his whole life took. And then, you know, the people that he knew
Whoopi Goldberg, David Letterman, Billy Crystal. They're all in the documentary.
Directed
by Marina Zenovich, 2018 documentary film. It played 6 sellout screenings at the Sundance Film Festival in 2018. Mm. Sundance.
Is that in France? The Sundance?
Yeah, the Sundance. It's available on HBO.
You're going to
94% Rotten Tomatoes.
Hello. Did not know that. But
94%.
I'm here to tell you.
I'll check it out. And if anybody in Tacoma is listening, because I know you are, according to our metrics, let us know what you think about the Robin Williams documentary. Hey.
Now, where are people going? Where are people going to talk about her?
We have something. Oh, you can go to, we're going to set up an email. Kyle and Kevin, did we do it at gmail.com?
No, we're gonna have our own address.
Wait, should that be it? I haven't set it up yet. Kyle and Kevin, did we do it at Gmail? Is that too much?
No, but I was thinking of the name of our band with Carter. And I was thinking of
our bass bombs.
You know, I've never
met Carter.
I have to admit, I haven't met Carter. I've just admired his sweet, sweet jams.
Yeah,
but I was thinking we need a name because
he's a jamster.
When this whole thing, when this whole COVID thing nightmare is over. I think we're going to have to hit the road as a band. And I was thinking we're going to need a name.
So what's the name of the new band with our bass bomb, bass zone, sultry sound, bass player Carter, me on drums, KG on guitar and vocals?
Does Carter have a last name?
No, Carter is the last name.
What?
I don't mean to blow your mind. Yeah, I can't remember his first name.
His name's Jimmy Carter?
I don't know his first name. President? I forgot, but he would say, I saw it in the bottom, it said something Carter, at William Carter. So I was like, wait, Carter's your last name? He's like, yeah, people call him a Carter. He lives in Nashville. I'm not sure he sounds exactly like
well,
that. But
you know what I have to say about that? Well, get Carter.
So what's the name of the band? The Did We Do It's?
But duet is D-U-E-T.
The Did We Do It? Did We Do It? It's a working title.
It's got who are working on it.
If you like the name of that band, let us know at didwedoit@gmail.com.
You know what?
Which I think is going to be the email, or underscore didwedoit underscore on Twitter and Instagram. Boom. Hey, I want to tell you one thing. We've got somebody popping in a few minutes.
What?
Which Ooh. Leads me. Well,
you know how I feel about guests. Who is here today? God.
Well, this isn't, I wouldn't say like a guest. This is a friend. Because I know you have an aversion.
If it quacks like a guest and it walks like a guest,
it's a guest.
The guest today, are you ready, Kyle? The guest slash inner circle friend is Matthew Walsh, otherwise known as Matt Walsh. You might be familiar with a little show called Veep with Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Oh, I love that show. Oh, that's a great show.
Matt was nominated for Emmys.
What?
Best Supporting Actor twice, playing the role of Mike McClintock. That's right. He's from Chicago. He is one of the founding members of UCB with Matt Besser and Amy Poehler. He's been in...
And? Ian?
Oh, Ian Roberts. Ian Roberts.
You know, I'm almost positive he's not listening. So, Ian, but that's part of the funny of the UCB is that you always go, so you know Amy Poehler?
Yeah, of course. Like SNL, yes, as Saturday Night Live.
And then, so that's kind of a running joke. This is great being able to talk about Matt before he's on.
Well, he was also in Elf with you. He was also in the movie Role Models, Semi-Pro, The Hank.
Stop right there. Let me tell you something. Yeah. Matt has been in everything.
He's been in everything.
Okay? He's a go-to utility guy. He's a guy that you just wouldn't think was funny at all. And if you met him in person, you'd completely agree.
He's a little dry as a bone.
Kidding. He's a dry bone. He's very dry.
He's dry. Like Bill Murray, dry. Yes, dry humor. Yeah.
But he always...
He's a master improviser, though. A master improviser.
Yes, well, that's the thing. And I was thinking, you know, that should be the theme of our show today is... Because when I think of Matt, of course, I think of him as a pal. Mm. And... of course on Veep, but I really think of him as the UCB dude because they really were trailblazers in the world of improv. Now I would
Upright
say
Citizens Brigade, for people who don't know, it was a improv comedy troupe started in New York, then they had a spot here in LA, and I'm sure Matt can tell us about it, but huge. But you know what I think of when I think about when I think of Matt is the Bears. He's a big Chicago guy.
Well, he had a podcast. Yeah, Bear Down.
Is that still?
And I think we got to ask him about that. I'm pretty sure that he's moved on. This was quite a few years ago, but
well, it just makes me think about the fact. Now, this is an evergreen, but we've got it's Super Bowl weekend, Super Bowl Sunday tomorrow, and I was just thinking this morning. I've been fortunate enough to go to two Super Bowls in my lifetime. I went to 1982, Miami against the Washington Redskins with my dad at the Rose Bowl. Saw John Riggins with the famous run from the 50-yard line, barreling into the end zone to win the game against the Dolphins. Wow. And then more recently, do you remember that? John Riggins, mm-hmm. The Beast? And then more recently in 2002, when I was working on Alias, ABC put everybody up in La Jolla at this beautiful resort and then sent everyone down to the game in a bus to see the Raiders against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2002. And we were all sitting kind of down by the field in a VIP section. I just remember driving down in the bus to the game the next day, and I'm talking to George Lopez. He's talking my ear off about losing weight. He's on his own show. He had his own show at the time. And I'm like, yeah, you look great, man. He's like, you know, but I just feel like this is the only chance. This is my time. I'm on TV. I want to look good. I want to look good. It's like, you do look good. You look great. And we literally the whole time we just talked about George's fluctuating weight. God bless him. He looks really good now. He lost all the weight. He's trim and.
Well, it's funny you say that because as with George, even though I'm an old man now and nobody cares, I kind of obsessed with it. You know, it never really.
You look good.
If you're heavy. Thank you.
Yeah.
But no, there's always more to lose.
Well, so we get to the game and we're sitting,
yep.
Greg Grunberg's there, who we have wants to come on, sure, on the podcast, by the way. And we're sitting down there in their little section of
that's surprising. You think we can get Grunberg?
Yeah. So we're sitting in a section of all the quote unquote celebrities, and there's Tiger Woods.
Oh no.
Two seats down. And he's not looking at it. He's looking straight forward at the Raiders. He's not letting
of course.
There's rubber.
He's in a fishbowl. Of course. Of course.
Yeah, you know. Woods. I mean, they're gonna look at me or Tiger Woods. So, but and it's interesting. He's wearing a cap with a Nike. I think it's a Nike cap, but he's got the Nike. I remember this blacked out with tape because he didn't want anyone. Maybe he was promoting another. I don't know what.
Anytime you see a guy with a Nike cap, it could very well be Tiger Woods.
Right, but isn't it interesting that is that why you think he blacked it out?
It seems unlikely, but I want to put that in. That draws more attention than Leo DiCaprio's baseball cap in Central Park.
Celebrity hats. So there he was with a cap. And so Grunberg, God bless him, knows him for some reason. Grunberg knows everybody. Sure. Starts chatting him up. And I'm in the chat. I'm kind of in the circle of chat. Do you know what I mean? Just kind of poking my head in. And,
And you got to act like you've been there. Don't celebrate in the end zone. Act like you've been there.
Yeah. But of course I wanted. Yeah. Exactly. There's a lot of nodding. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I didn't really say much because Greg was kind of chatting and talking about getting what kind of food they had there in San Diego at Qualcomm.
Small talk.
Yeah. Oh, did you try the fries? And then Greg's like, I'm getting hungry. And I said to Greg, I was like, yeah, we just ate at the hotel. They had that big spread. He's like, oh, I know. And I have to eat like every single round. And then Tiger's like, yeah, you know, when I'm playing, I have to eat every like 2-3 hours. And I was like, and then it was kind of a pause. And I said, yeah, well, Grunberg has to eat every 5 minutes. Huge laugh. Uproarious.
No,
laugh.
You did yes, it?
Nailed it. Yeah. Tiger looked at me with the nod. The laugh. Yeah. And the point nod. It was like that when you busted up the boxes.
I was going to say the elf. It took me right back. We felt an opening. We're just the little guys. We're looking for an opening.
It's all.
And then you just felt it. And you go, it's timing. Hey, it's timing.
Okay. Yeah. No, you know what the joke was? It was, he said, I have to eat every 3 hours. And I said, Grunberg has to eat every 3 minutes. I used the three.
Three, of course.
That's what it was. Yeah.
And then, you know, if that wasn't a script, you'd do it like Greg's got to eat every 3 minutes. You'd like do it, you know.
Put some stink on it. Yeah. But I did. I just got it out really fast. Somehow it came to me.
The timing. You got to get it. It's not going to work a minute later. There's a shelf life.
No. And then it was the game was starting again. And Tiger was like, all right, good to see you guys. And then Greg kind of looked at me like, all right.
You know, you got one in there.
I was born in the baby down cat scan when my builder fell down on the rat scan. People sold a super one a trip to the P now. While I settle off the shores of the Long Island. I mean, my mind is clear when I transmit. I am the manner of the family because the pants fit. I want to let forensics prove that I commence groove with
yes, but you also you don't want to. You can't try too hard. You know, nobody likes the guy who's just trying to make you laugh constantly.
That's why I wanted to bring. That's why one of the takeaways of the Robin Williams coming back full circle.
He was.
Was, of course, the guy who was on.
Yeah.
To a degree that you had to go, And it was the forced merriment. He didn't allow you not to laugh at him.
Right.
So if you didn't laugh at him, it was like, he put so much energy out there.
You know, it's funny. When I was 16 years old, I went to school here in LA, and my friend's father was the attorney for the movie Hook, I guess for DreamWorks. And so my friend knew I was interested in acting. He said, Josh Leibowitz, if you're listening, he said, do you want to come down to the set of Hook? I was like, absolutely. Maybe I was 15, 16. So we go down there. We meet Dustin Hoffman, Robin Williams. They have to go in and do the scene. I'm watching the scene and they're talking like this. Dustin's talking like this. And I'm thinking, why is he talking so quietly? Oh, that's what film acting is. You don't have to perform, just speak like a person would speak. You know what I mean? Like, I thought acting was, you gotta act, Kyle. Less is more. So Robin Williams comes over and he's doing the thing. He's entertaining, doing all the junk. He's jumping around. He's trying to make these young guys laugh. And I said, hey, I just have a question. It's so nice to meet you. Do you have any advice for a young actor?
Oh my God, you served him up the softball? Okay. All right. How old were you?
15, 16.
Our hall pass, yeah. Teenager, sure.
Yeah, of course. I was just excited to be there. And he says, just keep doing it. Even if, just always perform. Even if you have to perform on the back of a hay truck, go to that hay truck, get on the truck. And I'm thinking, well, I live in LA. There's not a lot of hay trucks, but I understand what he's saying. Just keep working.
And that's why we started the Did We Do It podcast.
We will not be deterred by the band.
No, and you know, no one has to listen, except, you know, who's a big fan is Alexei von Stroheim.
Oh.
Alex can say, he sent me a picture of him listening in his car and then saying he was all caught up and that we were great together, apparently.
Wow.
And I was like,
he's a real critic too.
You know what? I met Robin Williams one time. We were doing Carnage at Joseph Papp's Public Theater in New York in 89. Yeah. I think we covered that.
Yeah.
And he came backstage after a show and was the nicest, most gracious guy. Sweet. And he did the thing where it was all about us and made you feel special. And just
served it back to you.
Served it back. Yeah. He had it down pretty good.
I think that's great. And if I ever meet anybody, you know who came to the set of The Runaways? Kimya Dawson, who is in the Moldy Peaches. She wrote all the songs for Juno, the great movie with Jennifer Garner. And she came with her daughter, who was a big fan of Runaways. And I felt the Robin Williams, like, I got to make sure you are having fun. Do you know what I mean? There's the pressure, I think. And I'm sure it was. The Beatles.
There were places I remember all my life, though some have changed.
The Did We Do It?
Did We Duet?
The Did We Duet live on 95.5 KLOS, Jim Ladd.
In my mom, he said he called Dr. Robert. Anytime in pain, Dr. Robert. Dr. Robert. He's a new and better man. He helps you to understand. He does everything he can. Dr. Robin. Well,
is Matt here?
This is the interstitials before Matt arrives. I don't know. He's not here.
Wow.
Is he? I invited him. We're just getting the Beatles through the years with the Did We Duets.
Come out this morning,
this podcast is now just, we should just do an hour of you playing covers.
Kyle, I got a question for you.
Yes.
Are you looking for shoes?
Oh, I love shoes.
Sure. More specifically, are you looking for a fresh pair of sneakers, kicks?
Well, I like sneakers, but I'm kind of into the vintage, retro, classic designs.
Really? Rare sneakers?
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of a thing.
Well, I know where you can find them.
What?
eBay.
What? eBay?
That's right, eBay. Whether rare, dead stock, or the latest release, you can find the exact shoe you're looking for at ebay.com/sneakers today. A team of experienced sneaker authenticators will verify the box, the logo, the stitching, and dozens of other inspection points. As the original sneaker marketplace, eBay is the place to go to cop the pair that you, Kyle Gass, have been eyeing. And it also protects sellers with a verified return process. Give us a little jingle jangle for eBay.
eBay, they're coming through. They're gonna get your shoes for you.
Go to ebay.com/sneakers today. eBay, the world's best destination for discovering great value and unique selection. Dude, that was our first ad.
All right, now I know we got it. Yeah.
Wait a minute. Here we go. Matt's here.
I'm going to play him in.
Yeah. No, I know. Play him in.
Don't be distracted by my guitar, Matt.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Matthew Wolf.
This feels like pirate radio.
What's that?
This whole thing I'm stepping into.
Oh, yeah. It's
like you guys are on a secret ship somewhere.
It is our version of Zoo TV. What was that movie about pirate radio? Bill Nye was in it.
Yep.
It was called Pirate Radio.
Are we talking about that movie on a boat?
Yes. Pirate Radio. The radio.
Wasn't Phil Seymour Hoffman in that?
Oh.
Playing the DJ, some famous dude?
He might have been.
Matt, did you ever work with Phil, Matt?
No, he was in New York, and I would see him around, and he may have come through. I'm sure he came through UCB at time, you know.
Did you ever play Frisbee with him in Central Park?
Sorry, I'm fixing the camera.
Yeah, no, sideways there, Matt. You're sideways.
How's that, fellas?
Kevin, fantastic.
It's great. Thanks for joining us.
Now, this is a deposition, as you know. If you could just tell us exactly what happened, please, Matt.
I don't want to over-explain anything, so repeat your question.
Are you looking forward to the Super Bowl tomorrow? Who are you putting your money on? That's my first question. I know you're a big football guy.
I'm staying with Kansas City. I feel like, I don't know what the spread is. 3? What is it?
Yeah, I think so. Let me check.
I would just say, like, they're going to win the game. I don't know how close it'll
right?
be.
Right?
Brady's such a great story.
It's such a setup to be a wipeout. Doesn't it seem like a classic old school 35-3 or something?
I don't know. Tampa has a good defense and Tom Brady is the GOAT. So
isn't it the ultimate storyline that the actual GOAT, Tom, without a doubt, is playing the probable new GOAT? And it looks like it could be a torch handoff is what I'm saying.
It is.
Chiefs minus three. Now, have you ever been to a Super Bowl game? I've been to 2, and we just discussed it prior to your arrival.
I bet 85 you were there, Matt.
No, my brother Pat and my brother Mike and some other friends.
Why didn't they take you? You didn't want to go?
I was at college. I think I was up in Northern Illinois.
And you were studying for your improv ship?
I was working a little bit. I was delivering pizzas that day.
I delivered pizza too.
Lou Malnati's?
No, a place called Pizza World. Not great. Mm.
So you went to, what was that? University of Northern Illinois? Is that what you just said? And were you a theater major?
psychology major, but I've never been to a Super Bowl. That was your question.
Yeah. Well, your chance in Chicago, being a Chicago guy, would have been the fridge year, the 1985. Is that what we're saying?
Well, yeah. the greatest Super Bowl shuffle.
The greatest football team ever assembled in the history of football.
Kyle, can you give us a little Super Bowl shuffle on the guitar? Do you know that one?
Go ahead, cue up, Johnny, if you got that. If you got that. Now, wait a minute, Matt, you're a veteran, a wily veteran of the podcast from the Bear Down podcast.
Of the art form genre?
Yes.
Yes.
Now, how can you give us like the wiki, like it ran from X to X and guests and stuff, and advice for new podcasters like ourselves?
I love that your show feels authentic. I got tired of doing ours because it wasn't really just about the Bears. It started about the Bears, and then it just turned into us getting our funny friends to do sports parody impressions, basically, or come up with like NPR style segments, and we would interview them. You know,
Sounds great.
Just pure fiction. It was so fun to make.
How many do you do?
A little labor. It seems a little labor intensive, is what you're saying, because you kind of have to manufacture.
But that's where the improv genius. You never have to really.
Yeah, but
we had an editor, and then you could always say, "Okay, hold on," and then you could talk about what you wanted to do next. Like you could kind of structure it like three beats. Like we were doing like three beats. We always knew if it was a character that was at the, let's say it was the Harmonica Museum in Louisville, Kentucky, and it was being played, by Horatio Sands. Let's say we knew that like.
I love Horatio.
We might do a segment where we meet him, and then we might go into a second segment where we're maybe in his house as opposed to the museum. And then the third segment would have some weird epilogue. But we always knew between segments, we would talk about it a little bit. So after the first segment, there would be legit discovery.
Right.
And so we would say, that's good. Yeah. Okay. What if we, and we sort of had an idea where it was going, but you try to incorporate that stuff. And then we would do a second interview, which would be hopefully shorter, and then a weird epilogue piece that could go anywhere. And that was sort of
trying way too hard, is what I'm getting from this.
Well, it was a lot of work. And the segments, when they were good, they were like 20 minutes long or something like that. 25. Yeah.
How many Bear Downs did you do?
That's a great question, Kyle. We probably did it for 8 years.
Whoa.
Wow.
Wait a minute.
Kyle already hates me, and it's only been 8 episodes.
No, that's why I'm asking. When can I get off gracefully? I guess is really
he wants a Brexit.
Brexit. Yeah, I'm looking. But you did 8 years. That's like a run of a.
That's longer than Veep, Matt. How long did Veep go for?
Longer than Veep, but we had a mutation. I think we did like 2 years as Bear Down, and then like five or six years as like UCB Sports and Leisure. So we kind of rebranded it and then launched it out of the podcast studio at Sunset, and that was easy because it was right next door. You know, I used to have an office there, so
on Sunset. Now Sunset, I understand UCB Upright Citizens Brigade Sunset is recently due to the pandemic no longer. Is that
correct?
I'm so sorry. A bummer, man.
Thank you.
I mean, you guys are the legends. The we were just discussing the godfathers of the improvisational school outreach. Performers,
but we're hoping to reopen Franklin, which is our other theater out here, and that hopefully will be like run like a non-for-profit, and we'll try to we've publicly invested in like not in rooting out like institutional racism, because there was like, you know, there's stuff in our organization that we were blind to, so we're trying to fix that. So but that's my hope.
What year did UCB start in New York?
Oh God, 99, 98.
I remember being. Do you remember that party?
That was me and Kyle. Yeah,
that was when I met you. And Amy and you, and I think all of you guys were there at somebody's crappy New York apartment.
Well, were you and Jack performing on SNL that week? And it was like an after hours party that I saw you later.
though that was the next one, but there was somebody
just
got
a
us
party
together.
With the Strokes or somebody.
Oh, but wow. That was no, even that there was one before, like somebody wow. thought it was a good idea that we should meet you guys. And we weren't really, I think we were both kind of, I don't know, it felt like it was 99 or 2000 or something.
Was it like we were going to work? Did you guys do monologues at ASCAP?
No, we were just, yeah, there was a connector guy. And somehow we got together and it was really, yeah, it was fun to kind of meet you guys early. And then,
so did we have like an official meeting where our reps set us up at like a hotel and we sat down?
No, this was a house party. This was
a house party. Oh, then it must've been my house. Cause I live right above the theater.
Yeah. Let's move up to the Strokes party. What was that? Was that the SNL party?
I feel like the Strokes party was like, we had flipped, me, RJ, and Pat had watched a Bears game, and I think we lost to like the Redskins. It was a heartbreaking loss. And then we got on planes and flew to New York, and Pat and RJ were up all night. And Pat and RJ convinced some woman at the game to park their car, and then we were trying to guilt Scott Armstrong to drive us to the airport. But long story short, it was like this epic bro out weekend, and we came back to New York, and I was living there, and I think that night there was some after hours event at our UCB space on 22nd Street. So Pat and RJ were, you know, excited, and Pat always loved celebrities. So, you know, Pat was super excited.
Oh, man.
He was still living in Chicago.
Matt, we've talked about Pat muscling in on benefits, pretending he's Kyle's management a few times. So yes,
so good.
He's crafty.
Yeah.
That party, I remember it was literally like 3 or 4 in the morning, and it was jam packed. And I was,
I think it was, I remember one with the Strokes running around, and they were very popular at the time, or they were just breaking. They were like reinventing rock and roll.
And there was, they were on a lot of cocaine, I think.
2002. Yeah. And it was neat. This is it album. 2002. Yeah. Yeah. It must've been around then.
So maybe just before that, 2001, 2000, something like that.
Yep,
I don't know.
Yep.
How was the seed planted to get UCB up and running?
Simply wanted a clubhouse for all these people that we were already teaching and all these shows that we were already sort of directing. So we got to New York and started teaching improv, but we wanted a sketch show on Comedy Central. So we were doing two things at once, kind of, to supplement our lives.
And you did end up getting a sketch show on Comedy Central.
Yeah. We basically hit the ground in New York. We were, you know, we're like a band. We were playing every venue, every night of the week in New York. Yeah. And New York had this wonderful alternative comedy scene that was erupting with people like, not erupting, but its latest version was people like Marin and I'm sure Louie was running around, Janine and Todd Berry. And so we were kind of landing in that. And that was really cool to be in New York around that time. And I loved New York, like as a single man, New York's amazing. It was amazing. So fun.
So if you were married, it wouldn't have been as fun. Is what I'm getting from that.
I can only tell you that it's very conducive to like spontaneously like meeting people and going on dates. And it's wonderful.
New York was always great.
Especially because LA, you got to have an appointment and a car. And a,
yeah. It's a lot of planning. You know.
And who's got those? I mean, appointments and cars. Come on. Why did I become better friends with Pat, your older brother, and not you, which obviously would have helped me with my career? What happened there? Where did I go wrong? What did I do wrong?
Thank you for your faith in my heat, first of all, as always. Right back at both of you guys. I don't know. I think Pat was good at poker. I remember going to poker, and at some point, I'm like, I always lose. Like, I don't want to just pay money to hang out anymore. Yeah. So a lot of the early stuff was around poker, and
a famous game. We've discussed Kyle's game before. Now I have one question about that. Did you ever find yourself succumbing to pot prison at the game? Did you ever accidentally eat a brownie or anything where you felt too high
Matt
to play?
Matt is a very sober man. He would never get
God, I would I don't do edibles, Kevin, but there's okay. probably they're, a night where I was like a little foggy from whatever Kyle put out on the table.
Yeah, there, because we've had quite a few people that have admittedly fallen.
It's like those those guys on the south side of Chicago, Checker Records, where they would give the artists bottles of whiskey before they signed the contract. Oh. It's like Kyle's kind of like weakening the herd.
Got to plump the pigeons, man.
Then he's just raking in cash.
Kyle did seem to do quite well at that game. I think it had something to do with your tolerance.
Bob's a shark. He's a great
player. That was a legendary game, Kyle. After the pandemic, can we bring the game back? Maybe.
Absolutely not. No, there's nothing. Have you guys had this where I'll just sort of a thought process will go, and then I'll reach a Corona block. It's like, oh no, that can't happen. Like, for instance, I'll sort of daydream like, oh yeah, maybe we should get the poker game maybe revved up, and then oh no.
I mean, maybe in 2022.
That'd be fun to take a trip maybe up north. No.
About that stuff, right? So now even if it did boost Kevin's career, because we do have to help. You know,
that's what this is all about.
I know. This is why do you think I'm doing this? This is helping my career.
Can you get me on the reboot of Veep? Is that possible? Is there
going to be a reboot? I'll let you know when I hear about it.
Armando hasn't called yet to tell you.
Armando just made. Did you Armando. See? Armando is how he says it. He just not just, but him and Simon wrote David Copperfield, and he directed it. It was great.
I haven't seen it yet.
It's probably on like Hulu or something out there. Yeah, it's really, really good.
Like legit, like costume drama, or is it an updating? Or
it's his take on it. There's like costume, but it's not. It doesn't feel like the old black and white version of Dickens at all. It's Armando's take, and which I find really refreshing. And even the kids liked it. Like my two boys liked it, which I was surprised. Really? Yeah,
Armando was only show running the show for. How many seasons he let for four? Did the writers catch up to what you were doing and then start to write in your voice, or did you continue to improvise until the end?
I think the character solidifies at some point. So I think the process in the early, certainly the pilot, the early seasons, there was room to improvise. They were looking at what our strengths were, and we were contributing, and there were rehearsals where we would improvise and writers were in the room taking notes. And it was always welcome to pitch ideas. And then equally, Armando's a great writer, and he would, you know, taskmaster these writers to do another draft and another draft, and he would make cuts. And so it was always down to the wire. So you were never invested in memorizing things, because you knew on the day of the morning of filming, it was going to be a lot different. And so that DNA stayed in the show. But as the show went on, I think it also became bigger, because early seasons we swam in Selena's wake, and then in the later seasons, whatever, it expanded. The worlds got more diverse, and it became more like a Simpsons show, not like the Simpsons, but populated with a lot more interesting things happening outside of the Eisenhower building. So that's my like simple overview of the evolution. But we were definitely like, I think my strength as an improviser helped me on that show, obviously, especially in the early days, because I was helping create the voice of the character, and you don't always get that. You don't get to rehearse for 2 weeks to do a pilot in London ever, and then have a director, writer who's there going, do you have any ideas? I'm like, oh my God.
do I ever?
Well, also failing a lot, you know, and going home. I know in the first season we would improvise when we finally, might have been the pilot, we improvised for a week. And I would talk to Morgan, like, I'm really not funny. Like, it was really hard because it was a new group and you're like taking swings and everyone's nice and supportive, but it's like just clunky. It's like brutal.
Evan Arnold, who was on the podcast a few weeks ago, he was talking about the fact that he rehearsed in like a theater prior to working, which is so rare. You never get to, we're going to go to this theater and the writers are sitting in the audience and go ahead and we're going to kind of work it out. And then when you get on the day, my question is, you didn't feel that you could improvise anymore? Like the improvising was done in the theater rehearsal, and then on the day we've kind of cemented it.
Yeah, know. I think I think those things, like once table reads start, you know, table reads are to hear things. And then the writers or Armando or Dave Mandel, when he had the show, would decide like,
Dave, right,
that's not working. Or they would reconvene and Julia was in on those conversations. Always Julia was in those conversations. So the writer's room just was always open. And it was funny because in Baltimore, the writers would write in the bar at the Four Seasons Hotel where they were living, and you would see them. And you would say, like, what are you working? He's like, oh, and you would also gather information, like, what's the next episode?
Right, right, right.
And they'd be like, you could throw them an idea if you had a last minute idea. And they'd be like, that's not bad, you know?
Yeah. Were you ever like, well, Mike, does Mike McClintock date anyone in the next episode?
Well, Armando actually, between season 2 and 3, had lunch with us all and say, and basically said, what would you like to see your character do?
What did you say?
We had some stuff like trying to have a baby. I thought would be a funny plot line for Mike.
Yeah.
A fertility thing, that world. Cause I had some personal friends who went through that and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why was your improv show called Ass Cat?
I think it came from a poster Besser made. It was like collage art from the punk rock aesthetic era. And the fake acronym was Automatic Sprinkler System Siamese Connection Alternative Theater. But
and I loved how you brought in the monologue. Did you ever do the monologue, Kyle?
Of course.
Oh, you did? How'd that
go? God, yeah. Oh, I'll never forget it. It was just terrifying.
Well, explain real quickly what's the premise or how you do it.
You go ASCAT simply as you get a guest monologist, and then they get a word, and then you listen to that monologist. Monologist hard because you're kind of riffing on the word and what it makes you think of, and hopefully you land on like a fruitful full kind of story or a couple of stories that have details and are interesting and maybe get a laugh. And then while you're doing that, then when you finish that, you sit on side stage on a chair, a little stool, and then we the performers come out and start to unpack the ideas in your monologue and play with themes or make jokes with it a little bit.
So Kyle, how'd yours go?
Oh, it was terrible. I'm sure.
That's and not true. I'd never forget Kyle always that. Starts every story with, it was a disaster. Yeah, and then it disaster. Gets better as he tells the story.
But well, sure I'll never forget Matt because I think I brought my guitar. I was just, you know, terrified. And
yeah.
You go, like, ah, my safety. Tools.
Sure.
I needed my, I brought my guitar and Matt was like, you don't need the guitar, Kyle. He was just calling me out on it. And, you know, of course, it stayed with me to this day.
You're like Bob Dylan.
The truth hurts.
You need your guitar, you're Bob Dylan.
I can't do it. I need
to. I wanted you to succeed. I think that would have worked against you succeeding.
Yes.
That's why I told you to get rid of the guitar.
Of course.
You had my. Yeah, because it's a small venue and it's intimate. Yeah.
But how many did you think you've done of those? I mean, how many ASCATs over the years?
It is crazy. Like 10,000, I swear to God. I don't, but oh, not 10,000. But like the show's been running for 20 years at least, 1996.
Now, let me ask you this.
24 years, 25 years. I don't know.
Wow.
What do you think? I've seen a lot of them. And why is improv, when it's going, it's a transcendent, like amazing gift when things are falling in, or it can be so painful. It runs the gamut. Why do you think that is? I mean, you guys are all pros and stuff.
Oh yeah, of course.
Matt never had a bad show.
Never. You know, the quality of the people doing it matters, I guess. Like the, you know, experience or smarts or talent matters. So if you have a good cast, you might get a better show. And then I don't know, it's a very it's
ephemeral. I mean, it's very
kind it of, is ephemeral. Yeah, you're chasing like what like jazz musicians chase, like, and yeah, it's also catering to an audience that cares about jazz. Like people in the improv audience care about improv, so
yeah,
it's that's also it is it can be niche at times, but a good show is funny to everyone.
Are there some legendary shows that for like the greatest ones and the worst ones that you guys kind of have stockpiled, like that night when maybe everything went wrong or anything?
Yeah, I think sometimes like if you go to the audience and you start interviewing someone and then they tell a story about something like dark, it's like,
right. Audience participation. That's a bad show. Always.
But bad shows like were early shows where you didn't have an audience. Honestly,
There were more people on stage than there are in the audience. You know, because like in the theater when you're doing a play and opening night's great and the energy's great, and then the next night, Saturday night, if you open on Friday, you're trying to kind of recreate what you did the organic, let's stay in the moment.
But I'd say different for a rehearsed show though. I mean,
well, that's what I mean. So in improv, do you find like in a panic moment, a lot of improvisers will go to what they know will work?
Yeah. I mean, if it's really ham fisted, it'll feel clunky and it won't work. Yeah. Like if you're forcing in your Irish accent into a scene that has nothing to do with it. Then it's
kind of that's what my Irish accent is. It working?
Let me hear your Irish accent.
I don't know what you're talking about. See, because funny. It doesn't sound like a real. Like
it's funny every time. I mean, you could.
I also think like anything, there are like, you know, journeyman tricks. Like if you move the material along, if you edit enough, then you can put some pace in the show and then change the slate or take an idea that is working and really focus on that by like going on a tangential run of that character, like literally pulling them out of the scene and following what is really funny and interesting. And you just know, cause the audience is laughing at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
So you do have, you are trained to understand where the funny is. So
do you think there's cheap laughs? Do you think there's laughs that are just drop your pants for a laugh kind of thing that aren't?
Yeah.
You might get a laugh, but maybe
they work. There are cheap laughs, but they work. That's my hot take on that.
Who, in your opinion, the best improvisers?
Wait, hold on. You know what? We don't have time to mess around. Who's the greatest besides yourself, man?
Let's go top five.
Honestly, who's the greatest?
Oh, like the art form of improv?
I've heard that you worked with Hitchcock. Is he the greatest improviser?
Who?
Who is it? Who's the Hitchcock guy?
Michael Hitchcock. Yeah, there is a Michael Hitchcock. He's funny. I don't know. It would be guys I ran with. It wouldn't be anyone I don't know. You know what I mean?
Like, sure.
I feel like anybody who's a really strong writer can be a great improviser, you know?
Really?
And also...
But isn't that a different skill set than maybe...
Well, there were guys... I don't know. Yeah. It is and it isn't, because you're... Verbal agility is really going to serve you well in a moment on stage like that. Like actors can play things and stakes really well, but like a writer can just like run with a premise spontaneously, you know? And so it's a lot of that. It's writing on your feet. So, you know, McKay was obviously a brilliant writer. He was a pretty like game-changing improviser when he came around town, for example.
Adam McKay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you guys like the other sort of bigger, like the improv? Were you guys competitive with other improv groups? Was it sort of or was there more of a fraternity? Who were the big?
There was a silly like rivalry with Second City for a lot of people. Like,
right.
I was with a place called the Annoyance Theater and we did like parody musicals. That was our bread and butter. And then Improv Olympic was pure improv. And then Second City was the only place you could get paid to do theater. So everybody was gunning for these touring co-slots and there'd be a culling of the herd once every year where you'd go in and you'd get on a touring company if you were good and you made your name around town because there was like open improv shows where people would kind of mix. So there was like a little bit of rivalry that way.
Was the motion picture Don't Think Twice based on the Upright Citizens Brigade?
I think it might be, but I haven't seen it.
It's a great movie. Yeah, really good.
Yeah.
And even though,
is it? I've heard it is really good.
It seems very authentic.
Have you made a point of not watching it because it's a black hole would be created because it's about a New York improv?
I think I probably haven't watched it because I don't know that I want to watch a movie about improv. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, do you want to see
a movie about golf hackers?
About
bad podcasters?
About another Tenacious D tour or train wreck tour?
There was.
That's interesting.
Concords, Flight of the Conchords. Kyle has an issue with that.
That's funny. I tried watching Almost Famous on a tour bus one time. And I had to stop like really fast. Like, this is no. Stop.
It's like reading.
A little bit, right?
It's like reading Old Man. I agree with you. Reading Old Man in the Sea while you're on a ship. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
What are you writing something now? that you're working on?
Yeah, I'm writing several things. Hopefully, we just finished. We got
in
to
it
shoot
for Kyle. Is there anything in it for Kyle?
Now listen, what scripts? What you're working on some projects? Is that true?
Kyle does a great English accent. What were you saying, Matt? You got something? You sold something? You got licensed?
No, we got to make a movie during the pandemic, which was insane. We went to Tulsa for a month and shot a movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Give us the elevator pitch, can you?
A couple goes to a remote area where their devices don't work, and it's called unplugging to help their relationship.
Did it work? Don't spoil it.
I need to do that with my kids. Like, let's all just put our devices down.
Now, that's a fantasy, isn't it? Haven't we all had that fantasy? I'm going to go away for a week, a weekend, whatever, and I'm not bringing any devices. Does anyone ever do that in real life?
Kyle can't even do that when he goes to the bathroom. He device.
You can't not. You can't. In this world, you have to have. Like when I take a hike, I leave my cell phone in the car. So if I'm hiking for like 2 hours, I won't put my cell phone in my pocket a lot.
You hike for 2 hours?
Hour and a half.
We saw him at Fryman. He didn't have a cell phone. We're like, hey, yeah, put the thing in this.
Why did he pretend not to know us? Remember that?
There was rumors of some scandal around you too, so I had to stay cold for a while.
More opportunities.
You know, I saw Matt played. He was a rom-com. You were a romantic lead in the motion picture that I saw.
We made a movie in France that's on Netflix. Yeah, called Under the Eiffel Tower.
Under the Eiffel Tower.
Congratulations on that. You were telling us about that. I think you were editing it when we saw you at Fryman. And that's great, man. And this
also an uncredited Pat Walsh in that movie.
Hey, why uncredited?
There is no.
I don't know. I don't know why. Because it was an indie.
Wait a minute. Now we have three more minutes. Are we wrapping this up? We could continue.
Yes.
Okay. But Matt, I have a question. The movie that you did that you just did in the pandemic, this is something you wrote and directed and star in.
No, I didn't direct it. I co-starred with Eva Longoria, but I wrote it with a buddy of mine, Brad Morris. And Deb Fisher, who is an editor of things like The Hangover and Meet the Parents. And she's directing her first movie with us. So she's
you were
a
great
seasoned
in The Hangover, by the way. A classic Matt Walsh comedic turn. So it's the two
Thank
of you, you and Eva. That sounds great, man. Kyle, you worked with her on
Lower Learning.
Yeah.
What?
I remember I spent all day. I was the one who had to kind of supposedly keep her hands behind her back. It was a strange. So, you know, when you're shooting, you have to sort of do that all day. And I was,
you get to know someone quickly.
I was, yeah, weirdly touching.
Did we do it? Did we do it? Kyle and Kevin gonna shoot the shit. It's the thing. Did we do it? Kevin and Gage, coming your way, that's what they always have. Did we do it? Did we do it? Did we do it?
Good night, everybody.
Please like and subscribe. Please like and subscribe. It will really help me.